Call the Health and Social Services Committee to order at 1:32 p.m. on Wednesday, February 15, 2017. We're meeting in room 205 of the Capitol Building. Please make sure you silence your cell phone as a courtesy. Present today are Senators Von Imhoff, Senator Geisel, Senator Begich, and myself, Senator Wilson. Senator Machicki will not be joining us today. Today we are bringing back SB 32, the Autometry and Autometrist, which is sponsored by Senator Geisel. We heard an overview and took public testimony on this bill on February 3rd. Today we have two autometrists to answer a couple of questions from the committee. SB 36. Dr. Gunnison and Dr. Barney are in the room today. If you guys would like to come and join us here today. And please remember to state your name and affiliation for the record. And I believe you were submitted some of the questions from the committee and may have some additional questions at this time from committee members as well. And you may begin.
Thank you, Senator Wilson and fellow committee members for allowing us to speak to you today. My name is Paul Barney. I'm the chair of the Board of Examiners in Optometry for the state of Alaska. I'm also the center director of Pacific Cataract and Laser Institute in Anchorage. A little bit about my practice, and then I'll talk to you a little bit about my role as board chair and how that would play into this bill. So I practice in Anchorage. I have a practice that specializes in cataract care, laser vision correction, and medical eye care. And I work with an ophthalmic surgeon and an advanced practice nurse. And together, the three of us provide high-quality, low-cost care to Alaskans. We've been doing this for, I've lived in Alaska for 17 years. We're the largest cataract provider in the state of Alaska, as a matter of fact. But the point being, we work together as a team, and by doing that, we're able to maximize our training. And by maximizing our training, we can provide care more efficiently and more affordably. My role on the Board of Optometry, I've served on the board for 5 years. I'm the current chair. And as you know, SB 36, you've heard arguments for and against SB 36. And there are concerns about SB 36 allowing optometry to do more than what we're trained to do. SB 36 would not allow us to do anything more than what we're already trained to do. There's a limitation that would prevent us from writing regulations beyond the scope of our training. As you know, the Department of Law oversees all healthcare boards, and consequently, if we tried to write regulations for something we weren't trained to do, we'd have to prove to the Department of Law that we were trained. We would not be able to satisfactorily provide that documentation and proof if it's not being trained in the accredited schools of optometry. So I think there's a fail-safe right there that would prevent us from doing something outside of our scope of training. Also, as a provider, if I do something outside of my scope of training, my medical malpractice is immediately negated. I'm no longer covered medical legally if my care was ever challenged. So there's another incentive for people not to do things outside of their training. And in addition, if you do something outside of your training, you're not going to get reimbursed from medical insurance carriers. So there's really no incentive for us to provide care that we aren't trained to do because we wouldn't get paid. And probably more importantly, we could end our career by doing something outside of our scope of training. Dr. Gunnison.
Thank you. Through the chair, I'm Jeff Gunnison. For the record, I've been licensed in Alaska as an optometrist for 40 years, since 1976. I'm currently the legislative chair for the Optometry Association, and I'm the past board chair of the State Board of Examiners. I've twice served on the state board in the past under two different governors. And I was a 22-year Alaska volunteer for our National American Optometric Association. I'd just like to point out our education is exactly the same as a dentistry model. It's 8 to 10 years of university-level education. It's been testified that our education is inadequate, and I wanted to point out that two of our optometrists that have the largest practice on the Kenai Peninsula went to Ohio State University and had the same professor for pharmacology that one of the ophthalmologists had testified last time. They had the same exact professor for pharmacology, so the education is similar. Optometrists are defined as physicians under federal Medicare. We treat Medicare patients and are considered, and that's been that way for a good 18 years, I think. There's 160-plus optometrists, depending on the military and public health. And we serve over 80 communities in the state. Small villages. Some of our doctors go to small villages and see patients. The reality is that we all work together very well, the optometrists, the general family physicians, and the ophthalmologists. And you can't compare our training with ophthalmology training because it's like comparing a family physician with a neurosurgeon. We need ophthalmologists. We love having their abilities to do their surgeries. We only overlap in a small area, but we do very few of the things that they do. And we're not trying to do things that are outside of our scope of training. And it's of the four prescribing professions, only optometry has to always come back, to ask daddy for permission, if you will, to change something as technology goes along. And so we are very skilled in using our professional judgment to know when to refer patients.
Any other questions from the committee to the optometrist? Senator Begich?
To both of you, we had an opportunity to talk, and I, for the record, Dr. Barney did my LASIK surgery, so I don't know if that's a conflict, but you did a good job. Thank you for that. But, actually, you had the person come up from Seattle.
Dr. Ford did the surgery.
Dr. Ford did the surgery.
I did the preoperative evaluation and the postoperative care.
Right.
And like I mentioned earlier, by working together so closely, we can actually provide more efficient, more affordable care.
So one of the questions that I asked you out there, and I expressed to you the concern that myself and others had expressed about the, we have a responsibility for public safety. Later on, we're going to take up another bill. SB 32, it's going to be on, which is dealing with a completely different issue here in health. But it, once again, is our committee taking on the responsibility of looking at legislation that comes before us, determining whether the public safety is met or not met, because that is the responsibility of this committee and the legislature. Mm-hmm. So understanding that that responsibility exists and understanding that there's no ill will about whether the optometrists do or do not, maintain or have the power to assess their own skill set, but our responsibility for public safety. I asked you both about the importance of some clarification around surgery specifically, and surgery in a way that would both meet what I consider health concerns that the AMA has brought up and some of the letters we have here brought up that has been testified to in this committee, as well as meet some of the needs and interests of what optometrists in Alaska are doing. And I suggested to you that might require language around surgery. And your response at the time, and I don't want to mischaracterize it, was that appeared to make sense to you. Could you comment on the idea of a tighter definition of surgery for us, so help us understand what the optometrists are willing to let mm-hmm. us see in statute here?
Yes. Through the chair, Senator Begich, certainly I'm not opposed to a language that defines that further if necessary. You guys know better than I how to do that legislatively and so forth. Just historically, SB 36, the way it's written right now, was introduced, SB 55 was introduced last session and was changed. The change was passed by the Senate, and that change was essentially what SB 36 is today. We decided to introduce that because we felt that was a good starting point. If there's a better way to word this to achieve the goal of allowing the board to determine the details of the practice of optometry, I'm all in favor of that. Did I answer your question?
Just a slight follow-up.
Yes, Senator Bankenfeld, for follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, three of us weren't in the prior legislature,
right.
And it's the funny thing about the process is we all bring our different collective wisdom to the.
Yeah.
And sometimes that can make it somewhat convoluted, and I appreciate the starting point. We're coming from a perspective, I think, of wanting, you know, to know more, but also to ensure that we're doing our due diligence to protect public safety. So while I appreciate those thoughts, and very much so, Mr. Dr. Barney, I just want to reemphasize that our approach to public safety will be the collective wisdom of the 30th legislature, and I thank you for expressing an interest in crafting the language that you think might work and that we think might work. So I hope that we can come to that conclusion at some point here. I suspect it won't be in this committee, but I do suspect that it will happen. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
Through the chair, Senator Begich, part of the difficulty is that there are forces out there that...
You can identify yourself.
Oh, I'm sorry, Jeff Gonison, again. There's forces out there that have tried to suppress our profession for a long time. But to answer your question on surgery, the problem is that we all know what surgery is. Everyone does. Clipping fingernails is surgery, any altering of tissue. So some states try to define it, even for their dentists or their physicians. It just gets murky because if you put a surgery definition in this law, it applies to other fields too, unless you exempt them. And it gets into be a big rat's nest. And so that's why you leave the details of that to the medical board, the dental board, the nursing board. There's nothing in the nursing statute that says you will not do brain surgery, because it doesn't need to be, because they don't do that. And it doesn't need to be in the optometry law that says you will not do these 16 things. I mean, they came out with a proposal to put 110 procedures in that we could not do in statute. It makes no sense. We don't do any of those things. If we did, we'd be arrested. There's nothing in the dental law that says you see the dentist, he says, gee, this needs to go to the endodontist for a root canal. You refer it up. That's how we work together as a committee. So as far as surgery goes, you can't, if you restrict surgery, then you have to start getting into the weeds because a gentleman gets a piece of metal in his eye. They do it every week. I get it. They're working under the car. And, of course, men always wait a week till they come in, and it's rusted by then. So I use a scalpel, a magnet, and a drill to remove the metal and the rust. And that's surgery, but it's very minor. And do it all. I've been doing it for many, many years. But we do not, you know, penetrate the. We don't do any of those things that they're claiming that we'll be trying to do. They think we're trying to somehow make ourselves specialists when we're not. I hope that kind of answers it.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Begich.
No, to answer your question, Dr. Gunnison, it makes it more difficult for me to understand the answer because I thought I had a clear answer that surgery as a definition might be something that not only that you entertain, but you understood that concern. And we do have a definition of surgery in statute, and admittedly, part of why we have a legislative affairs agency here that drafts bills is they look at other statutes and where those definitions will conflict, and they identify in those statutes where they do, and they allow us to know that in the process because all of us are generally generalists here. Mm-hmm. With that understanding, a definition of surgery is a norm in many, many states around this country. And I've provided to some members of the committee some of those definitions. I've researched some myself. And you know, I am now confused as to whether you are or are not willing to look at a definition of surgery in statute, because I've heard you now say no, and I heard Dr. Barney say yes. So which is it? I'm confused.
Through the chair, Jeff Gonison. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to say I wouldn't look at that. I was just trying to explain why it's difficult to define exactly what you do. That's the kind of thing, in most states, it's done in regulation. Some of the optometry laws, because all 50 states have different laws, because of compromising and, you know, how legislation gets made, then they end up with certain things. And they often have to go back when some new technology comes along. If some new technology with ultraviolet light comes along, we may have to go back and ask for permission to do that rather than the board being able to say, yes, you're trained in this, you have passed these requirements, therefore you're authorized to do this procedure.
Thank you very much for your answer, Dr.
Any other questions?
Please. Thank you both for talking with us today. I appreciate it. Just to clarify a point, trying to create a bill, any bill, so open-ended that it precludes having to go back and change statute as technology changes, as circumstances changes, is probably too difficult in any industry. I'm already noticing that we're tweaking things now in this legislature for all sorts of different things as new chemicals come about, as new technology comes about, as new laws come about. That's just the nature of the beast, I think. That being said, what I'm understanding is that this particular conflict has been around for quite some time, and I understand the challenge of optometrist having to come legislatively every single time. It's not cost effective for any stakeholder. So the key is to stop this nonsense and to move forward, that while we may find a solution that not everyone is happy with, everyone can live with. So I think what's important is Senator Baggage and I and a few others, we've looked at what other states have done. Some are more onerous than others, but some have tried to thread the needle to make it make sense for all parties. So I think what Senator Baggage was asking you today for a deliverable is to perhaps, could you take a first crack at what you think, based on other states' legislation, what might make sense? So, thank you.
Take an IDs. Back on the record. Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm certainly thrilled that Senator Baggage has done research on the definition of surgery. I guess I was one of the members of the committee that didn't receive that. But thanks very much, nevertheless. Just a few questions for Dr. Barney related to board function. Can you tell us about the number of patient complaints that the Board of Optometry has received in perhaps the last decade?
Through the chair, zero. I better qualify that. We've had probably some complaints. Usually they're complaints about money issues, charges, and things like that. We've not had any complaints that have required any disciplinary action in the time that I've been on the board, and I've been on the board for 5 years. And to my knowledge, there were no complaints that required disciplinary action prior to that for the 5 years prior. So,
thank you. Follow-up question, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, please proceed.
Thank you. So, you know, one of the other things that we deal with, not in this committee, but one of the other legislative committees, has to do with the fiscal status of the boards. You know, there's multiple boards and commissions, and many of them are underwater. In other words, their license fees aren't covering the cost of the function. Can you tell me about the Board of Optometry? Where are you at financially? Are you in good standing with the division?
Through the chair, Senator Giesel, we currently are in good standing. The last scope of practice bill that was passed was about 10 years ago, and following that, there were some legal expenses in implementing that scope of practice change, and we got a little bit behind, but we're in the process of getting caught up, and we're in good standing right currently.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Yes, please.
So you used a phrase that probably needs clarification. You said there were legal issues related.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Can you clarify what those legal issues were?
Department of Law implementing the scope of practice change. So the Alaska Department of Law, when, as you know, when there's a new statute, it goes through some investigation and so forth to make certain everything is kosher, and that is billed then to the board. And when that happened, the board or the license fees were not increased, so we fell behind a little bit. And we're in the process now of getting caught up. And I think the next cycle we will be completely caught up.
Mr. Chairman, follow-up?
Yes, Senator Giesel.
So is it fair to say that when you implement regulatory changes, you pay for the services provided by the Department of Law to review those regulations, and therefore the board, funded by licensees, has to pay that cost?
Through the chair, yes, that's correct.
Great. Thank you very much. That's all. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, at this time, seeing no further questions, are there any final comments from the bill sponsor at this time?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I think Senator von Imhoff really encapsulated it. This has been an issue that has been discussed multiple times over at least a decade. It continues to take time in this legislature. In that time, optometrists have been practicing safely. You've heard testimony that professional complaints against their practice are zero. I think it is time to allow this board to function as other boards do. I have the definitions of the scope of practice for the four boards that currently have authority over their regulation, over their regulatory authority, and that's nursing, physicians, dentistry, and pharmacy. All are extremely broad. I will speak only of my own advanced nurse practitioner scope of practice. It means that a registered nurse authorized to practice in the state who, because of specialized education and experience, is certified to perform acts of medical diagnosis and the prescription and dispensing of medical, therapeutic, or corrective measures under regulations adopted by the board. One of the really interesting ones is for the scope of practice of medicine and osteopathy. Osteopaths are not medical doctors, they're doctors of osteopathy. This is a subspecialty, so to speak, that believes that adjustment of the spine is often an answer to medical problems. They, however, fall into the same definition, and it says, for a fee, donation, or other consideration, to diagnose, treat, operate on, prescribe for, or administer to any human ailment, blemish, deformity, disease, disfigurement, disorder, injury, or other mental or physical condition, or to attempt to perform or represent that a person is authorized to perform any of the acts set out in this subparagraph. I think, listening to that, you can hear that the practice of medicine is all-encompassing of everything possible that could happen to a human being. We don't worry that a family practice doctor is going to attempt heart surgery. We don't worry about that. I suggest that the same reasonable outlook could be applied to optometry. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Are there any amendments at this time for SB 36? Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion at this time to move this bill out of committee.
Thank you. I move Senate Bill 36, Version A, from committee with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Is there objection? Seeing none, version SB 36, version A, is moved from Senate Hess Committee. Taken at ease to sign the document.
Back on the record. Now we'll take up SB 32, Interchangeable Biologic Products, by Senator Hughes. We heard an overview and took public testimony on February 10th on this bill, and I'd like to ask Senator Hughes and staff if they'd like to come up for any final comments for this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd be happy to answer any questions or overview anything if the committee members would like anything clarified at this time.
Any comments or questions? Senator Baggage.
Senator Hughes, I received a letter today from the Medical Association, State Medical Association, indicating opposition to the legislation, but with the opposition being that it was not as permissive as it needed to be because biosimilars are perceived to be rather safe, considerably safe, and FDA safe. And I just wonder if you'd offer a little comment on that so I fully understand your position in relationship to that position. It is fully my intent to hope that this bill moves from committee today, so I'm not asking that you consider an amendment. I'm asking just what your thoughts are on that particular piece.
Thank you. And I did just receive that letter as well today, and I will say I was kind of surprised because, you know, we had heard received a letter from a physician earlier, not only wanting notification but prior authorization. And so now what we're seeing from the State Medical Association that they believe that the FDA process and approval of biosimilars, not even going to considering that the silver standard, that would be fine with them for substitution, and not even that gold standard of an interchangeable. However, I do believe that these products are new, and that because the FDA does plan to have the additional criteria of the gold standard, I do believe that leaving the legislation as is would provide another level of safety. And just so folks understand the criteria the FDA uses, I do believe that a prescriber needs to stay in the driver's seat as far as, and as we've talked before, the legislation provides that the prescriber could write dispense as written, could write call if substitute available. But the FDA criteria is very strict. Number one, the interchangeable first has to be classified as a biosimilar. Number two, it must be expected to produce the same clinical results as the original biologic product in any given patient. And number three, the risk in terms of safety and efficacy of alternating or switching between the use of an interchangeable and the original biologic is not greater than the risk of continued use of just the original biologic product. So you can see the standard is very high as far as that goes. But I thank you for that question, Senator Begich. And I want to mention, too, that a number of physician groups, because I believe there was a little confusion that some of the support that came in across the nation were perhaps patient groups. But there were quite a few that were listed, and I'm just, if with your permission, would just like to quickly rattle off the list. These are prescriber groups. These are provider groups. First of all, every state medical society in every single state, the American College of Rheumatology, the National Medical Association, the American Association of Clinical Endocrinologists, the American Association of Neurological Surgeons, the American College of Mohs Surgery, Association of Black Cardiologists, American Society of Plastic Surgeons, the Congress of Neurological Surgeons, and the National Hispanic Medical Association. So these are made up of healthcare providers, not just patient advocacy groups. And I thought that was important because they have looked hard at this, and the consensus language that we reached, it seems to be appropriate. So even though I appreciate the fact that the State Medical Association here actually somewhat went from maybe being very concerned that we might need prior authorization, they've actually swung where they think that we ought to trust FDA on this and are even comfortable with what is happening in many advanced Western countries, and that is just taking the silver standard of biosimilars. But I still think the gold standard of the interchangeable is what's best for Alaskans.
Thank you.
Any additional questions for the bill sponsor? Well, I go through mine here. Senator Hughes, I noticed that there's a $4,500 labor and commerce physical note for this bill. Seems a little odd. Can you explain that for me, please?
Well, you know, thank you, Mr. Chair, for that question, because I thought it was a little odd, too. I for putting together the regs, which would be pretty simple process, I'm not accustomed to seeing departments ask for funding to write a minor set of regs and for a simple task such as putting the FDA link on their website. So, Mr. Chair, I do kind of question that, but the department would have to explain that, and I think because there's a referral to the Labor and Commerce Committee, that is something, and I am on that committee, Mr. Chair, that question will arise and hopefully be tended to.
Thank you. Senator DeGiesel.
Just informational, Mr. Chairman. If you turn to page 2 of the fiscal note, it articulates the reason for the fiscal note. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other comments for the bill sponsor this time? Well, are there any amendments for Senate Bill 32 at this time?
Mr. Chairman, I offer amendment number 1.
Okay. Does anyone object?
I object for the purposes of discussion.
Okay. Senator DeGiesel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The amendment is being distributed. So I will call my staff, Jane Conway, to come forward to explain the amendment, and then I will speak to the purposes.
We can just take a brief at ease so folks can have a chance to just review the documents that may want a copy of the document. Record. Ms. Conway, you will introduce yourself for the record, and you may proceed.
Good afternoon, members of the Senate Health Committee. My name is Jane Conway. I'm staff to Senator Kathy Giesel, and refer to Amendment Number 1. Excuse me. In a nutshell, Amendment Number 1 requires that communication must be provided and authorization obtained from the prescribing practitioner prior to dispensing the medication, the interchangeable biological product. That is what the amendment does in a nutshell. Now, coming from legal, it looks a lot more complicated because it changes in various places throughout the entire bill where that intention needs to be interjected into the bill. So page 2, line 17, it adds or interchangeable biological product. It also adds interchangeable biological product after obtaining authorization under C of this section. Page 2, line 25, following shall, before dispensing the interchangeable biological product. Again, just emphasizing that these things shall happen before the dispensing of the product. Page 2, line 26, it deletes the words biological product and inserts proposed biological product that may be and may be dispensed. Page 2, line 27, following product, inserts the words and obtain authorization from the prescribing practitioner. going down to page 2, lines 27 and 29, deletes the line, the communication must be provided within three business days after dispensing the biological product as follows. That whole line is deleted and inserted. Instead is the communication may be provided as follows, colon, and then it goes on to show how those different communications can be done. Page 3, line 10, following information, inserts the words, to or obtain authorization from the prescribing practitioner. More conforming language, page 3, line 19, following information, inserts the words, and obtain authorization. Page 3, lines 21 to 22, that was a little error of a comma that was caught during the second, during the draft of the amendment. So delete a comma without the prescriber's express authorization. Moving on to page 3, line 23, following A, inserts without the prescriber's express authorization. Page 3, line 25, following B, inserts again with prescriber's authorization. All these changes have to do with the intent of that amendment to have all the communication be provided and authorized before the dispensing of the drug. With that, I conclude the amendment comments, and if you have any questions, I'm available. Thank you.
Any questions from committee members?
Does Senator Giesel want to discuss the amendment, or because I will wait to offer my comments after I've heard from the senator?
Senator Giesel?
Just waiting for you, sir.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, I will speak to my amendment. Mr. Chairman, we held public testimony on this bill last week, and my concern is that the testimony was solely from those individuals who were advocates for the bill. I keep track, Mr. Chairman. Oral testimony last week had 16 national organizations advocating for this bill, and we had seven national organizations advocating for the bill, and four local organizations. There was no oppositional testimony. In the letters, written documents, we have 16 national organizations advocating and one local organization, and two local folks are opposing this. Those local folks were never heard from, Mr. President, or Mr. Chairman, so I'm actually speaking on behalf of them. I'm actually told that one of those local individuals who wrote a letter was asked to withdraw her letter. That concerns me. The argument that's put forth in the most recent document that I received today, in fact, maybe an hour or so, came from the Arthritis Foundation, and I've heard this argument before, that such an amendment that I'm offering would conflict with federal law, because the federal law allows this without the substitution, without intervention of the health care provider. And this is asserted to be a reason that the state of Alaska cannot be more strict. And, Mr. Chairman, I'm no lawyer, but I contest that assertion. I believe state law can be more restrictive than federal law. So I don't believe that that negates the amendment. Mr. Chairman, I'm a clinician. It has been asserted that if the FDA approves this, it's got to be okay. Mr. Chairman, I have heard from specialists who use these medications that these are unique proteins that act uniquely in each one of us in a different way, and that switching from one protein to the other, in other words, these allegedly interchangeable products, actually diminishes the effectiveness of these unique proteins in the individual's body. That concerns me. The second thing that concerns me is FDA approval being asserted as a gold standard. Mr. Chairman, about probably 15 years ago, the Varivax vaccine was approved by the FDA. This is a vaccination for children to prevent the occurrence of chickenpox. I worked at a pediatric clinic at that time, and We gave one of the first ViraVax vaccines in this state. A week later, that two-year-old came in and could no longer walk. His verbal skills were significantly impaired. He was having a reaction to this ViraVax vaccine. Mr. Chairman, FDA approval does not mean that there will not be adverse events. That sticks in my mind as the question I always put behind someone who says, FDA approves it, it must be okay. I also question, and I have heard from a pharmacist that they are not sure they have a concern about this, but I have concern for the pharmacist's liability. So the pharmacist now is making a decision to change this very unique protein medication without discussion with the clinician, change it to a different formulation. So the clinician has the health records of this individual. The clinician knows a lot about the patient. And he has chosen, he, she, has chosen this unique protein medication, wonderful medications. And now the pharmacist is unilaterally going to change that without consultation with the clinician. I contend, Mr. Chairman, that there's going to be a liability for that pharmacist if there's an adverse outcome. That, of course, can only be tested in a court of law. That's a very expensive process. So that's my reason for offering this amendment, Mr. President, or Mr. Chairman. I don't believe this has to be rushed. I don't believe this needs to be done without the team that makes up healthcare, the clinician, the pharmacist, and the patient, all consulting together for the best outcomes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
With that, is there further objection to the amendment?
I object to the amendment.
With that objection, we'll take a roll call vote for this amendment. Chris from Senate Records, please take the roll, please.
Chairman, point of order?
I'm sorry, yes.
Are we allowed to make comments?
Yes, we are. Yes, you may speak to your objection. I'm just
I'd like to speak to my objection. As Senator Giesel noted in a duly noticed public hearing that had all the proper appropriate notice that is required by law, a number of organizations testified on this bill, and anyone was able and had opportunity to testify on this bill. And we had testimony, as she points out, that was overwhelmingly in favor of this legislation. I also take note of some of the comments in the Arthritis Foundation note, which I also received today, and would note that there's a question here of the amendment proposed potentially delaying prescription service. But I want to go further, and since we're talking about personal stories, a member of my own staff is a beneficiary of these products. My staff, who was in the audience, Richard Benavides, suffers from cancer, uses these, and has identified to me that the ability to have rapid access to what are known to be safe procedures is something that he finds is essential to his well-being. And I would argue, Senator Wilson, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, that our duty here is to allow a public process, and then through that public process, adjust, if necessary, a bill. We have done that public process. The testimony overwhelmingly favored the bill as is, or, in fact, moves in the opposite direction of what Senator Giesel is proposing. We'll have further committees, and there'll be further opportunity, but at this time, I want to express my objection to that amendment, and would urge the members to not support this amendment.
Right. Senator Giesel.
Mr. Chairman, for clarification, when we took public testimony, the individuals who had opposition to this bill were online. They were not allowed to testify because the meeting ran out, and public testimony was closed. Consequently, their voice was not heard. This amendment does not limit access to biologics in any way. The interchangeables, which are addressed in this bill, are not yet available. They may not be available for several years. what's the rush? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And just for the record, some of the comments for and against were publicized, and they're available online to on the internet to for folks to see. Senator Venema.
Okay. I very much appreciate the robust dialogue, and thank you, Senator Giesel. You brought up actually some interesting points that gave me pause today and made me think. It's interesting trying to digest the information that comes in associated with all of these bills, both in the written form and in the verbal form. As we sit here, I feel that it's best to try to, again, to use my words I said in the previous bills, thread the needle and try to find the best foot forward based on the information that we have in front of us. I understand the concern with the FDA. I don't share those same concerns. I believe that it is a very robust and successful entity, and that their analysis gives me comfort. I also see in the letter that we've received today that biosimilars have been used in Europe with excellent safety and efficiency efficacy profile since 2006 and have resulted in significant cost savings. And healthcare costs in Alaska is a significant issue, as we can all attest. And if biosimilars are biologically, there's no clinical meaningful differences between biologic and the reference biological in terms of safety, purity, and potency, yet it provides a cost difference, then I think it makes sense to go forward with this. I understand that there are no biosimilars on the market now, but yes, it could be years from now, but it could be months from now. We don't know. So as a good Boy Scout, it's best to be prepared. I'm going to vote for the pure form of this bill and not support the amendment. Thank you.
At this time, we will ask Chris from Records to take that roll call vote.
Senator
Giesel?
Yes.
Senator
Imhoff?
No.
Senator Kuchicki absent? Senator Begich?
No.
Chair Wilson?
Yes.
2 yeas, 2 nays.
Well, that amendment fails with a tie. So seeing that, are there any further amendments for SB 32? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion at this time to move this bill out of committee.
I will make the motion. I move Senate Bill 32, version J, from committee with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Is there objection? Seeing none, SB 32, version J, is moved from the Senate Health and Social Services Committee. We'll take an ID to sign that document. Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Before we leave this subject, you know, there's a reason that Senator Von Imhoff is on the Finance Committee. She has expertise in that area. There's a reason that I'm on the Health Committee. I'm a clinician. I appreciate the discussion today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Back on record. That concludes our business today for the Health and Social Services Committee. Are there any member closing comments? All right. As a reminder, we, HES Committee, will not be meeting on Friday of this week or Monday of next week. Thank you for attending, and we're adjourned at 2:24 p.m.